Hi, Michael.
Hello.
All right, are you ready for this episode?
I am. I only know a rough idea because I had to label the file. So I'm interested to see. I feel like I'm going to enjoy this.
Okay. So I was actually talking to my old coworker, and she was talking about how one of, or like her team, she was talking about her team and how some people like to take a 2.5 hour lunch every day to go to their Pilates class, right? And so I just kind of started thinking about, you know, all those things at work when you saw like what you saw your coworkers do. And then you think like, is that okay to do that at work, right?
Okay.
So this episode is going to be about, is it okay to? And then I just have a lot of questions that, you know, you and I can talk about.
Sure. Are you going to ask that specific one?
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with that. So do you think that it's okay to take a 2.5 hour lunch every day to go to your Pilates class?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I think it's fine. Who cares?
Really though?
Why? Why not?
So if I took a 2.5 hour lunch when I was working with you and you needed stuff from me, like, and we needed to have our...
You were in meetings all day. What did it matter? Honestly, there were times I couldn't get a hold of you for hours because you were just in meetings. What's
really?
The difference? Yeah. There were times... I can't remember what I needed, but I remember it was toward, like, COVID, mm-hmm. like, when we were getting to that. So it was winterish,
mm-hmm.
where something had come up. I got an email or a ping or something mm-hmm. that we needed to make a decision really quickly. And mm-hmm. you know what? This would have been... maybe closer because it was just kind of you and I at the time
mm-hmm.
and you were super busy. You were literally in meetings all day, every day, most days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something we needed to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just waiting for you to pop up somewhere so I could like run over and talk to you about it.
It's so, like Groundhog Day.
So in that way, what's the difference? Like, what's the difference if you're in a meeting or if you're in Pilates, like I would almost rather you mm-hmm. have like go to Pilates, you know what I mean? Cause you're going to be in a good mood then. Like if you're in meetings all day and I'm waiting on you and then I'm bombarding you the second you get out of meeting, like that's a little different versus you went to Pilates, you know, got something to eat, you're feeling good, you're feeling rested. I would rather that honestly.
Okay.
And I'm really idealistic. I get that.
Yeah.
Like, I also have not, you know, worked steadily since October. Like, I get that. I get all mm-hmm. of that. But, yeah, I mean, in the moment now, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think then if you had asked me that question, I may have still felt that way. But, like, it doesn't bother me
really?
If people do stuff in the middle of the day. Because what's the difference of whether they're in a meeting or they're doing something for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need less rigidity around things like schedules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you don't think it's okay?
Well, I'm going to raise the stakes on this.
Okay.
So what if this person is a direct report of yours, right?
Sure.
Comes in at 9 o'clock,
okay.
takes a 2.5 hour lunch, and then leaves every day on the dot at 4:30.
Okay. Do they get their work done?
Debatable.
Well, then, yeah, that's a problem. And then that's my second point.
Yeah.
If you're getting your work done, who mm-hmm. cares when you're doing it and what the deal is?
Mm-hmm.
I do understand the notion of like a 2.5 hour lunch, middle of the day, whatever. It's inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things that I had an altered schedule
mm-hmm.
When we worked together because I was in school.
Yeah.
And I went to everyone that I worked with closely.
Right.
Which was you, a direct report of yours. Mm-hmm. I went to my manager and maybe their manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want everyone to say that this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal basically was, if you need me to work outside of the schedule,
mm-hmm.
cool. Let me know. But mm-hmm. I need like notice.
Mm-hmm.
So there were instances where I would work 7 to 4 generally.
Mm-hmm.
There were instances where someone would come to me at 3:45 and be like, well, I need this by the end of the day. And
mm-hmm.
I would say, well, my day ends in 15 minutes. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also times where they would say, you know, hey, we're going to have this meeting. We need to talk about this thing. It's tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Can you make it?
Mm-hmm.
Of course I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
I can work with that. And I think it's the same thing. If the person's willing to work with it and if I say, hey, tomorrow, mm-hmm. I need this thing done, mm-hmm. and it's right in the middle of your Pilates class, like, can we adjust? Can you go yeah. to a later one? Can you do yeah. whatever? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I think the 2.5 hours, that's a really long, like, they're not doing Pilates that whole time.
I mean, I think probably the time to get there, take the class, sure, take a shower, okay. probably get lunch and come back, yeah. right? It's 2.5 hours.
Yeah. I could see maybe, you know, is there a way to condense some of that time? Can you, yeah. and I'm not an advocate. I hate eating at my desk. I hate eating during work, yeah. whatever, but that's one of those things where, like, you know, if you want to use your lunch break to work out, then mm-hmm. maybe eat your lunch and, like, get some things done. I think there are some ways to work around it. Just this question, like, in general, like, no, I don't care. Mm. I think we need to work to live mm-hmm. and not live to work. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an example of, like, living to work. Mm-hmm. We worked in cosmetics. nothing is that big of a deal mm-hmm. at the end of the day. Like, and we would remind each other of that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, if things were getting really out of control, there were times where it happened on the sales side, the marketing side, where it mm-hmm. was like, we would have to, like, pump the brakes and be like, it's shampoo. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not worth what we're putting into yeah. it. Not that we didn't work hard, but there were just times where, like, the stakes felt so high and we would have to remind ourselves, like, at the end of the day, like, we work in consumer shampoo. Like, yeah. it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah. 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 I think for me, it's more of, you know, if you're in an office setting where you're going into work, because I think work from home has changed a lot in terms of thinking for sure. about flexibility yeah. of your hours and things like that. But I think, you know, when I was at work, in terms of the team, you know, core hours are 9 to 4. I do want my direct reports to take a lunch, right? And that is 1 hour. But anything beyond that on a consistent basis, 2.5 hours, seems a little bit much, especially given that some of their stuff revolves, their time revolves around my time.
No, I get that. But I think that's where it's like, if the flexibility can go both ways, mm-hmm. I think it can work. Mm. I think that's what I struggle with, is the idea that the flexibility can't go both ways. Mm. If the company can allow me to be flexible with my time, I yeah. will happily be flexible with my time back mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To the company. And I had that attitude. And there were times where I would be like, you know what? You didn't give me enough notice. You're going to have to wait.
Yeah.
Or there were times that I'd be like, you know what? You didn't give me enough notice, but this is a pretty big deal. So I will jump in and mm-hmm. I will help out, but I'm not, you know, please avoid doing this. Mm-hmm. It would happen with lunch meetings. I was not big on lunch meetings. Yeah. I did not like them, especially when we started working from home, because my husband was working from home.
Yeah.
I was able to have lunch with him. Mm-hmm. It was great. We would watch, you know, an episode of something while yeah. we ate lunch. It yeah. was great. We yeah. got to spend a lot of time together. And we actually kind of realized during COVID, like, we didn't spend a lot of time together, because when we both lived up north, I traveled a lot.
Yeah.
We spent a year apart when I moved to LA, and especially through COVID, like, there mm-hmm. was a long period of time where we really weren't able to see each other.
Yeah.
And so when we were finally back together and we were working from home every day, something that we always thought would be awful, we thought we wouldn't get along, we thought we'd annoy each other, actually ended up being amazing. Mm-hmm. And, like, we got to spend so much time together. You know, one of us might take a short break in the afternoon. We would just go, like, literally lie in bed on our phones for 15 minutes and mm-hmm. just, like, chat, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so nice. And mm-hmm. so I think you're right. Through the lens, especially of, like, modern, of, like, flexible work arrangements, all of that, I think that there's a way to make that work for everyone. And I think a company who's not willing to do mm-hmm. that, or even a leader who's not willing to do mm-hmm. that, might just want to check with themselves. And I'm not saying that for you. I'm being careful of how yeah. I'm phrasing this because of what you just said. Yeah. But, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. I think if it becomes rigid on either side, it becomes mm-hmm. an issue. But yeah, like, if you know, hey, can we try to avoid that time? Mm-hmm. But listen, it's Monday. On Wednesday, I really need you at 1:30, and you normally don't come back until 2. Mm-hmm. Like, can you please work with me and mm-hmm. be there at 1:30? Yeah. I don't think that's outside the realm of you know, of decency. Mm-hmm. But I get why it sounds extreme. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit of an extreme example. But there was a period of time where it was during COVID. Our gym here was mm-hmm. only open certain hours. Mm-hmm. and they were during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I would only be able to go to the gym during lunch.
Yeah.
And I was turning down every lunch meeting because mm-hmm. that was my only chance to go to the gym every day. And so I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to the gym very long because I need to be able to shower, eat, get back to work. Because again, I hate eating while I work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think it's the worst thing. I think it's fine.
Okay. All right. My next question.
Yeah. Are these going to get worse?
No. Okay. I mean, some of it. But we're still in the very beginning stages of this. So is it okay to sell stuff to your coworkers? For example, like
Girl Scout
cookies. Yes. That was my example.
After I just said like, oh, it's so flexible. So I know my parents did that.
Okay.
They would take our stuff to work with them. And sometimes they would sell stuff, sometimes they wouldn't. They hated doing it.
Mm.
I don't have kids, so I am not of that experience to have to do it. I like Girl Scout cookies. I would love the chance to buy them and not buy them off the street like I have to, like literally. I literally have to find children selling cookies and ask them to buy some. So I don't think it's great. I don't think it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah, it's okay. It's not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it puts people in an uncomfortable position. Are you going to raise stakes on this one again? Because I can think of an example.
Okay, raise it.
If you're a people leader of any kind,
mm-hmm.
I think it's best to stay away from that type of thing. I was always a sole contributor where we worked. Mm-hmm. So I had contractors, but like they didn't live in the same city as us or even the same state. So mm-hmm. I had contractors. I would, you know, have never been able to put them in that position, even if I, for some reason, wanted to. So I think if you're like a leader of some kind, I think that that's a little dicey. I don't love that.
Yeah.
But I think if you're like a sole contributor or kind of near the bottom of that ladder, like sure, why not? I think if you're in any sort of position of power, it's not great. Or you need to sell to people at your peer level and not to your like direct reports. I think that's where it gets a little dicey.
Yeah. Like, how about if you left it out in the hallway with just a donation jar?
But what's the money going to?
To Girl Scout cookies.
Okay.
Like, you leave the merchandise with the donation jar.
Yeah. And actually, I had a coworker that she would sell chocolate bars.
World's finest chocolate.
We loved it though.
Really?
Like she would bring them to the national meetings where we all would be. And we all, I mean, if you didn't want to buy it, just didn't buy it. But most of us would buy it from her. They were really good chocolate.
Yeah.
I bought chocolate from her. So yeah, I think, but again, she was sole contributor. She was selling to her peers. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Had she set them out, I think my biggest thing is people are dishonest and I'd be worried about the money, to be honest. But I think if it were like, I don't know, I think people would just take it. Yeah, I think that's fine. There's no pressure. But again, I think if you're a leader, it would be best to stay away from that type of thing. But if you're like lower on the corporate ladder, like who cares?
Yeah.
Help your kids out. Because at that point, also like why a leader doesn't need a fundraise. Like you make money.
I mean, I think for me, like as a parent, God, like I used to hate it when they give you a box of chocolate and they're like, go sell this. And I'm like, you know.
Yeah, my parents, especially as we got a little bit older and they started making money. Because when, you know, when we were younger, my parents were in their early 20s when they had, early to mid 20s when they had us. So they, you know, were, you know, 20 or 20 something. Like they weren't making a ton of money. As they got into their 30s, they really started making money. It was also the 90s, so things were booming. Like it got a little different. They started to just be like, can I just write a check? Like, please don't make us sell stuff. But I think when we were younger and they didn't have the option to just kind of make a check, write a check to make it all go away, it was a little bit different and they would put the effort in, especially because it was always like field trips. And my older sister was a scout of some kind. I was a cub, but I made a birdhouse and I never went back. It wasn't really my thing.
So you're like, I'm over this.
Mine were only like school, like field trip type fundraisers. And I think, you know, they wanted to help me go on, you know, especially I was lived in a really rural area. We didn't have a lot of stuff around us. So to get to go somewhere and like get outside the school was a pretty big deal.
I mean, that there's a reason why my daughter's not a Girl Scout. So.
I think it's a good organization, and I get why they do it, but it's, you know, it's a lot of pressure
for parents and kids. Yeah, I mean, and you go and sell it at work because that's where
where
you spend your time, right? But, you know, it gets a little dicey, I would think. And personally, I never felt comfortable selling anything. Yeah. So, all right. Next question. So when you're hiring someone, is it okay to go on the candidate's non-professional social media to scope them out?
Is it okay? Yeah. But like, why? Why do you need
to make a decision?
Yeah. But like, what are you looking for?
Like, is this person someone that we can see being on our team?
But I think that's nonsense, to be honest. So it's interesting you brought this up, and I wish I had saved this tweet somehow. There was someone that recently tweeted that they lost a job because the hiring team found their Twitter and felt like some jokes that they had made didn't really align with their values, whatever. I think if you're going to be so... What's the word I'm looking for? If you're going to be so... morally, if you're going to put yourself on a pedestal, I guess, I want to see that effort coming back. So if you expect me to be some morally righteous person marketing shampoo, I need to understand where that energy coming back and how that benefits me. So I think in our case, the company that we worked at, if they were to do that, I would have trouble with that because I don't think that the company always acts in the best interest of its people, based on my experience at least. But in just general sense, like, sure, I think it's fine to look over it. I don't really get it. I think that... I think it's different if you uncover racist things or... But, you know, where does that line really stop? Like, where, you know, even racist jokes, of course, I think, you know, racism is racism, no matter the intention. But, like, where does that stop? Does that stop at, you know, I am a big believer in Black Lives Matter. I'm pretty anti-cop in a lot of ways. Does that make me a bad candidate because I am critical of, you know, power, basically? No, I don't think so. Like, I think it just means that I'm not worried to call those types of things out. I don't know. I am back and forth on that one. I don't really know. What do you think, though? I don't feel like you... You did say about the last one. You don't want to do it. So, yeah. What do you think about this?
So, for this, I think, you know, for me, I was actually really against it because my thing was, you know, your private life is your private life.
But if you put your private life out there...
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? And this is where it eventually kind of changes of where, you know, like if you go and look at pictures on someone's Instagram or, you know, whatever it may be, right? Like for me, that's irrelevant as long as your experience and background fits. And I feel like based on interviews and, you know, just talking to them that they are able to do the job that I'm hiring for. Right. But I also had a teammate who she was like that Facebook, Instagram stalker, right? She would go and just like look at everyone's social media and say like, this person is not going to be a fit for the team, right?
Yeah, I think that's where I struggle a little because on one hand, you're right. Your private life is your private life. I am someone who believes like my Twitter is public.
Yeah.
I have never had, maybe short instances have private Twitter over the years. But my Twitter's always been public because I believe that's the only like real authentic way to like experience social media is to have a public social media presence. I don't mind the option for private accounts. I do think that I don't like the fact that, especially on Twitter as an example, mm-hmm. a private account could quote tweet me and I can't see what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I don't think things like that should be allowed. That's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But I understand. And I think it depends because, you know, my Twitter is mostly like random thoughts and a lot of nonsense. Mm-hmm. But like, I have a friend who, you know, might post like a picture in a Speedo on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem? It could be for some people.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it just becomes like, yeah, where does that line get drawn? I guess it's the same thing I already said, but yeah, where does that line get drawn of like, who gets to decide what is right and what is wrong? So you had a peer that, you know, decided looking over some of the social media, they weren't a fit.
Mm-hmm.
What makes them a fit or not a fit? Like, again, unless they're just saying like racist or just really hateful things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what that can also turn into, and this goes both ways. I'm going to, again, use the sort of the critique on cops as an example. I don't think I'm a bad person because I critique cops.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just want transparency in how law enforcement works because there's very little.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make me a bad person? In some people's eyes, absolutely. There are absolutely people who think I'm a terrible person because I want transparency for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all have a different gauge of what is moral and what is right.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, I think it's best to not. I think if someone is really going to be a problem, they're going to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just the risk you run hiring someone that you don't know and you have no connections to. But I don't know. I guess that one I'm a little bit indifferent on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is just going to be a, you know, if you just think about hiring and if you also think about some recent events of that president of Estee Lauder getting fired because of what he put on his Instagram,
right? I forgot about that already.
Yeah. And so, you know, like, you're right. Like, some things are wrong, right? Like, some things you can't joke about. But even that, some people would think that's okay, right? Well, and so I think it is just like, you're putting your own values and that's the lens that you look at these through, right?
Yeah.
And I think part of it is like, well, then what are the values of your organization, right? And if your organization doesn't have clear values, then it becomes a very subjective exercise, right? Yeah.
Slightly different example, but I think it still kind of fits with this because it's employment. Jenny Nguyen, who was a cast member on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, was fired in recent months because people uncovered like 6 months worth of Facebook posts from 2020 where she was posting a lot of like anti-Black Lives Matter memes and things like that. And ultimately Bravo and the production company that produces Salt Lake decided that those views didn't align with them and they dismissed her from the show and she was fired. And I think that it's a really nuanced issue. Do I think that Jenny has a right to express those things? Sure. It's weird. I don't know why. But again, we all have a different moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
She claims several different things. She claims, you know, a social media manager posted those things on her behalf, which actually her social media manager has since come out and said, I did not post those things. I didn't even have access to that account.
Yeah.
I ran the business accounts for her husband's business or her and her husband's businesses. And so, you know, she was trying to displace blame. So I think in that way, she kind of knew she had messed up and you know, I was fine with Bravo firing her. I didn't really care. Because at the end of the day, it's their choice. Mm-hmm. They felt like she did not best represent their show and their branding. And, you know, that is kind of what it is. I think similar to Estee Lauder, that, you know, if you have someone, especially an executive who's posting really questionable, things on their public Instagram, you have a right to act in the way that you want to. But I think those are both slightly different cases because those are things that were covered later or uncovered later. And actually in the case of Estee Lauder, I mean, he was employed, he was just posting things and he actually had a really bad reputation for being a pretty not great person.
Yeah. So moving on, let's talk about when is it okay to hit reply all on an email? When is it not? I love that. Your reaction.
Okay. When is it okay?
Yeah.
If your reply is relevant to every single person on the chain.
Uh-huh.
So I generally would hit reply all if it's like maybe less than five people and mm-hmm. we're all a part of the conversation. I feel like for the most part, as a whole, our company was pretty good about putting people on blind copy to get them off of a conversation mm-hmm. if they were no longer relevant. Mm-hmm. I also feel like at least my teammates and I, whether they were direct teammates or just kind of functional teammates, mm-hmm. We were pretty good about like pinging someone to be like, hey, can you get me off that thread?
Mm-hmm.
I think if it's a company-wide email, first of all,
mm-hmm.
I don't even put that on the people who reply all because they're mm-hmm. doing it by accident generally. Mm-hmm. I put that on the people who send the email
mm-hmm.
because if you're going to send an email to 150 plus people,
mm-hmm.
put everyone on blind copy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put them on CC. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, that's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have created this months long chain of people replying mm-hmm. all that. Because mm-hmm. I had heard of a case, it was prior to me coming in, but I had heard of a story where someone finally replied to, it happened where we work before the first merger,
mm-hmm.
where someone finally replied and was like, stop it. Like, this has gone on for like a week.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Why are you all doing this?
Yeah.
I don't know if it did anything mm-hmm. in the moment, but mm-hmm. like, it definitely would happen, I would say, every couple yeah. of months
we yeah.
would get something like that. But I feel like for the most part, it would last like a day and then mm-hmm. it would go away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say if every single person is relevant to the conversation, sure, keep them in. But I tried to sort of review the list and I would try to take people off
mm-hmm.
that I felt like more. And I actually had a specialist that they didn't report to me, but they worked very closely with me at mm-hmm. different times. And I was very protective of what they got copied on
mm-hmm.
because I knew that they were constantly getting copied on things just because people would just put them on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would almost always be the first person to be like, let's take this person off because they don't need, like, if they need to know, I'll tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that understanding of like, if I need you to know something, I will tell you.
Yeah.
But you don't need to worry yourself with things that I am not telling you.
Yeah.
And I did that and they totally understood. We understood that it was just like, I knew that they were overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
They were helping a lot of people, like 8 or 9 of us.
Mm-hmm.
It was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just took it upon myself to be like, I do need you sometimes, but I will be clear and like, communicate with you when I do.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone comes to you and you are not hearing it from me, you can disregard because that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's just about communication, understanding, you know,
yeah,
when people need to be on it. But I think it's just attention to detail. People just don't look.
Yeah. Or sometimes people just want to put you on full blast, right? Because I've had
sure.
instances
yeah, I've
where,
had that happen.
You know, you're copied on an email and then it becomes this, like, let's throw someone under the bus
but
type
I think
of email.
Different.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that is, I think, definitely not okay when you're hitting reply all to emails
yeah.
like that, where, you know, that shouldn't be the first form of communication that you receive from someone about something. Problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there needs to be conversations behind the scenes first, like, kind of figure it out. Because I think oftentimes, because sometimes it's just so easy to just send an email that people, you know,
yeah.
start these like, almost like email wars, right?
No, totally.
And well, then you get caught up in that.
There's a specific example I'm thinking of, and I'm sure you might be thinking of the same one. It was an email to me.
Mm-hmm.
So an idea had come from a VP.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the meeting. I think we've talked about it before. I missed the meeting about it.
Mm-hmm.
I got the recap from you and someone else.
Mm-hmm.
We were all mad because we as a team kind of got plowed
uh-huh.
and like... you know, they just drove over everything we as a team kind of had to say. So I had come up with a response of like, okay, there are like 4 major things wrong with this.
Mm-hmm.
I had showed you and you said, yep, absolutely. We got data to support it from,
mm-hmm.
from trade. Like we were really careful about how we went about it. I sent the email back to this VP, had everyone on copy, because again, everyone was relevant to that conversation. It got forwarded to the president. And then like the next day, do you know what I'm talking about now? The next day it was a reply all from the president, basically just eviscerating everything I had said. But, and I've never talked about this portion, I don't think, a year later, everything I said came to me again in an email from him through someone else of look at all of these problems with this idea. And it was like, yeah, I told you all of that a year ago and you chose to berate me in front of everyone via email versus listen to me because every single point I said has now come to fruition and you are looking at basically losing money on this huge idea that's going nowhere. Because in the moment, it felt better to you to basically have to prove me wrong versus like intake the information I was giving you. Because that's truly, at least from my perspective, what it was.
Yeah.
Is he was defending his VP.
Yeah, no, and I think it wasn't so much about you. Because
it wasn't about me, but it was about defending his VP.
It was, appeasing his, person.
But then that person was gone.
Yeah.
And we ended up in this awful financial situation and he had no choice but to, So anyway, so you're right. There are instances where I think it's abused. I wasn't thinking of those. I was thinking of like the company-wide.
It's like company newsletter.
But even that situation, sure, reply all. We were all relevant to the conversation. But I think the issue I took from it was that was one of my first interactions I had ever had with him.
Yeah.
And the fact that he didn't have the decency, I guess, to approach us as a team to say, listen, I'm understanding you are not 100% on board with this. And as you're the team that needs to execute it, let's try to reach a compromise. And this particular VP, their version of compromise was, it's my way or I implode everything. And truly, though, like that's what the situation was. And so we had no choice but to go along with it. So anyway.
Good times. Good times. Such good times. Yeah. So another question that I have for you is it okay to get drunk at your company gathering?
I have. I should start with that. I don't really drink a lot anymore. When I first started working at the company we worked at, I drank. I was like a heavy drinker in my 20s, but like today really hardly ever drink. Because I'm a pothead. No, I think for me, this is less of a work thing and more of a, like, you just need to take care of yourself. And I don't think it's a good idea to get, like, sloppy drunk anywhere. This is slightly unrelated, but just, I think it's relevant. I am part of a fundraising group in Los Angeles, and a lot of the way that we raise money is actually through bars. Like, we hold parties, and we sell jello shots, raffles, whatever. And, you know, we raise money for just different groups in Los Angeles and or causes in Los Angeles. And so I have never drank at any of these events because I am there as a representative of this group. I'm highly identifiable. I won't say how, but I'm highly identifiable as a part of that group. And you know, it's okay for us to drink. A lot of the people will take part. I just don't feel comfortable, and I also just don't really like it. I especially can't get drunk anymore. Like, I just feel disgusting even in the moment. But what shocks me is a lot of these parties will wrap up by 7 o'clock in the evening, and people are already, like, wasted by 7, and it just blows my mind. It's something I've never noticed before when I would go out and drink, that people would just be completely gone by, like, it's not even dark outside. So that really kind of takes me aback a little bit of like people get drunk so early in the day and it's in, you know, it's the weekend, whatever.
Efficiency.
But I think this really just comes from a place of like, I just want people to take care of themselves and stay safe. We used to work in Vegas from time to time. I would definitely drink pretty heavily in Vegas. It would be encouraged. There were times where none of these people work there anymore. There were times where a card would end up open on a bar and we would be told, go ahead and get drinks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, I think it's a gray area. I guess my instinct is like, I would shy away from it. Mm-hmm. I've never gone to a work event like stoned or anything, mm-hmm. but part of that is I am not like a social stoner. Mm. I have a hard time. I get really socially aware mm-hmm. if I'm high. And so like, I've gone out a couple times high and I don't enjoy it because mm. I overanalyze everything. Mm. I overanalyze why people are saying what they're saying, why they say it the way they say it. Like it gets really weird.
You sound real fun.
Yeah, I'm not. And so like my preference is like, I want to stay home and like watch TV with my husband. Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't think it's a great idea, but like, you know, people should have fun. Like mm-hmm. I had a coworker actually, they also didn't drink. And they were like, I wish they would like provide cannabis for us. Like mm-hmm. I would have more fun, but they were just like, I don't like to drink. I do think that alcohol has a pretty dangerous relationship with us in our society, and mm-hmm. that like it's so normalized to drink heavily mm-hmm. and it's not healthy. And I'm not saying cannabis is healthy. Mm-hmm. I think cannabis has its own set of problems, but I think that like I think it's so strange that companies are so all in on alcohol, but like they still drug test.
Yeah.
I have gone to virtual happy hours high and also figured out I didn't like it because uh-huh. it was hard to pay attention. People would be asking me questions. I wouldn't register. So I would go to happy hours and stuff. Actually, my own happy hour when I left the company you came to, I drank ginger ale all night. Yeah. I'm not a drinker. Yeah. And so, I mean, we had food and stuff. It was good. But like, even we had one like last drink. It was super late at night. And I got another ginger ale because that's all I really drink when I go out. So, yeah. But I think it's fine. I want people to be safe. But
yeah. I think for me, you know, those Vegas parties, I would go and I would duck out early because, you know, there is a certain, because again, like, I tend to be introverted and there are certain lines that I want to draw. I mean, there are definitely coworkers that I became close to that became my friends and, you know, but that would be more of, okay, like us as a smaller group can go to a bar and I would feel comfortable just drinking, right? But when it comes down to, you know, when it comes down to partying with your company like that on a dance floor, getting drunk, that is not my jam.
Yeah, the first few years I would kind of hang out all night. But the part of it, I mean, we would have to work the next morning.
Yeah.
And usually the parties would end up happening like toward the end of the time we were mm-hmm. there. And the longer we would be there, the earlier we would tend to have to work during mm-hmm. the day. So we would have a party that would go till, you know, midnight or even later, because then they would sometimes move to another bar. And then we'd have to be back at work at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I value, I think, feeling rested and just feeling good. I already hate Vegas. I don't, mm-hmm. like, I don't want to feel like shit while I'm in Vegas. I was kind of the same way. The first couple of years, I kind of took advantage of it. It was very new to me, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fun to get... It's fun to party on someone else's mm-hmm. money, I'm not going to lie. But, like, I kind of started to pull back as well. And also, the team started to change, and there were more people that I think were like you, that like, you know, they would go to dinner, mm-hmm. hang out for a bit, and then they were going to head back to the mm-hmm. hotel. But the other thing is, those of us that were at a hotel, so sometimes we'd have to be in LA.
Yeah.
We would actually hang out. There was like a fire pit, mm-hmm. and that was just kind of a thing for us. Like mm-hmm. we'd go to the fire pit at night, we would hang out, get drinks. I was more apt to drink more in those situations than mm-hmm. I were the larger parties, because those were the people I knew.
Exactly.
And they were the people I talked to every single day. They were my mm-hmm. friends. I'm still friends with a mm-hmm. lot of them. So I think maybe the situation matters too. Mm-hmm. If I had dinner with my manager, I would probably be more apt to have more drinks mm-hmm. than if I wasn't with them. But mm-hmm. I also, to this day, still have a relationship with that manager. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like... it was a little bit more gray maybe, but I think it's fine. I just think, you know, if you know that you can't stop yourself and you're going to get sloppy, like maybe don't.
Yeah.
But if you can control yourself and even getting drunk, you can control yourself. Like, yeah, sure. Have fun.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
All right. Well, that all the questions that we have today.
It?
Yeah.
Oh,
I have more, like... but I, you know, I feel like we've
we have
covered
time for one more.
One more?
One more.
All right, let's do one more.
I mean, we don't have to, but we have some time. We have like, we have a little time.
Okay, this one. Okay. Is it okay?
I love the way you're starting.
Is it okay to wear revealing clubbing wear to work?
Is this what I think it's about?
I don't know. Is it?
Is it about a dress that was really aggressive for a Wednesday morning?
Possibly.
This conflicts me so much because I did laugh about it when it happened. But it's because I didn't like the person, which isn't any better.
Yeah.
Okay, in the grand scheme of life.
I mean, let's just pretend like I came in on a Wednesday morning.
Oh, I love that this is you now.
Yeah, like I came in on a Wednesday morning with, you know, like that it's closed from last night, right?
So, oh, well, that's different.
Well, no, not closed from last night. Like I am wearing...
But like it's a backless black dress. That's what it was.
Or a white dress or a blue dress.
But
or
it's, they're never going to.
A yellow dress, whatever it may be.
So here's the thing. I'm a pretty, like, I'm a feminist in that, like, I think women should be able to do what they want without mm-hmm. the, especially, like, the opinion of men.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that you should be able to wear that? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that... Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go with, even though I totally made fun of that person, because we can cut this out if you want to, but it's a, you know, that's a pretty specific example, I think.
No, but I used to also work at a place where someone, you know, would wear athletic, you know, gear to work, right?
Oh, I don't care about that. My husband wore sweatpants to work.
No, but like, it was see-through. And so you would see their underwear like through it, right? And it was like, and it wasn't just like, you know, it's like neon colored underwear underneath, right? And it, and this place was even more corporate than where we worked, right? Because of the category that we were in.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was a little awkward to see that.
Yeah. I think it would throw me off. But I think if it was just kind of who someone was, because there are people who like, that's just kind of how they dress. They dress kind of revealing, or they just don't really care or whatever. I don't care, I think, at the end of the day, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think there's a time and a place. So definitely where we worked, when we would have either, we didn't have vendor, we'd have vendors come in, some of our like agencies come in, but we didn't have customers come in. We usually went to customers, but once in a while we'd have a customer come. Or when we would have like the field people, like the sales teams coming in, we would tend to dress a little bit better. Versus when there was no one around, we dressed pretty casually. But you know, it was never like, so like the way my husband dresses when he goes to the office versus how I would dress when I would go to the office was very, very different. He will wear sweatpants, a t-shirt, a hoodie, whatever. He works in tech.
He works in tech. Yeah.
Whereas like, could we have done that? Probably to a point. I think I have joggers that I probably could have passed off as as an outfit that are literally just sweatshirt material like sweat material. But I didn't do that. But I think in the grand scheme of life, I'm not going to concern myself with what people wear. Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I think it's fine. But you know, there have been examples where I have kind of rolled my eyes at people or been like, oh, that's not really appropriate.
Yeah.
But I think looking back, it was more about that specific person. I can admit that. Like, I just didn't like that person. So I was more apt to criticize them.
Yeah.
But you know, they also made my life miserable. So I guess it's a trade. Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't care.
Okay.
I think people should be able to do what they want. I think that we get a little bit too wrapped up in, you know, I don't know. We don't know where this episode is going to lie in order, but we talked about scammers and fraudsters and Elizabeth Holmes and Anna Sorkin felt they had to present themselves in a certain way. And, you know, I think that that's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think, but you and I are on the same wavelength on that of, you know, for me personally, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that because there's the the idealistic and the realistic of, yes, ideally, should it matter what I wear to work for you to, you know, make any sort of judgment about who I am and who I am as a person, what I know, whatever it may be, right? But realistically, right, it's what we do, right? Yeah. It's what we're conditioned to do. I think it's the same thing as, let's say, when you and I were up presenting our marketing plans to the field, right? Yeah. To the salespeople, and I went up with inappropriate clothing, right? Would the sales team take me seriously?
Yeah. No. And I think that's a good point. And I was thinking of that too, of like, there does become a point where it's like, you know, ideals aside, people are people, and you kind of have to do what's going to be best for the broadest audience. Mm-hmm. And so, to your point, there was a whole section of my closet that was literally like, these are just things I wear on video, that I wear in presentations, that I wear when people are around.
Yeah.
And then there was how I actually dressed, which was like 90% black.
Mm-hmm.
But the brand that we worked on was no black. I would have to tell the field teams constantly, please stop. If you are working with our brand, please stop wearing black. Like you can wear, I would give them a whole like color scheme of things they can wear, because then their default was like, oh, I'll wear white. I was like, well, actually, please don't wear white. Like, there's other colors you can wear. And we started getting really quite loose with what we presented in. It kind of became like earth tones and jewel tones, and like it became a lot easier over time. But yes, there were times where we would have to almost dress in costume of like, this is what we wear as a brand. My teammates would call me, I'll bleep it out, but they would call me Jesus because I had long hair and I would dress in kind of flowier clothing. And, you know, it became a thing with my team of like, they knew when I had people in the buildings or whatever, that because I would dress a little bit differently. But yeah, I think there becomes a time though where if you are finding people are not taking you seriously as just an individual person, whether you're a man or a woman or, you know, not, you know, that unfortunately we have at most five senses and one of them tends to be sight. Most people are sighted. And so, like that is one way we take in information. And if you want to, if you do want to be taken seriously, I think there are ways that you can do that while still looking like yourself.
Yeah.
Even wearing colors that I wouldn't necessarily normally wear, I still had outfits that I felt like reflected me. I wore a lot of sneakers, things like that. And there were people that hated that I wore sneakers, like on stage or in videos. But I like sneakers and they always fit the equity that we worked within. And so I think it's a nuanced issue, but there were certain clothes. I actually had one pair of pants that I knew. So they're a white pair of pants. I either had to wear something super long over it, or I actually have like three pairs of white boxers. So I would basically have my underwear, boxers, and then the pants, because those pants were see-through and I didn't realize it when I bought them. And so I would layer, and you could, you could tell I had white shorts on if I had like a shorter top, but like it was what it was. I liked those pants. They were expensive. And so, I just fixed the problem by, I just bought white boxers to wear under those pants. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of present yourself in the way that people are going to best connect with you in the way that you need them to. So a black short blacklist dress is probably not the best way I would pick to present to an entire company full of people, but we saw someone make that choice and things have worked out the way they worked out for them.
All right, well, that's it for today. And that is all the is it okay to questions that I have for you.
So you can follow us on Instagram at Corporate Rehab Pod. Please leave us a rating review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Thank you so much, Nami. That's a fun episode. I like that one.
Thanks,
so,
Michael.
All right. Bye.
Bye.